There we go.
I thought I wasn't plugged in for a sec. Good morning. It's Saturday, August 24th, 2013.
Hi there.
My name's Scott Simpson, and this is Maritime Morning Weekend Edition, part of A Complete Breakfast. We'll have bacon this half hour, challenge you to name that newsmaker, then check in on a brand new sports bar for downtown Halifax. A multi-million dollar renovation has put a new face on the old Palace nightclub. We'll ask downtown Halifax Business Commission honcho Paul McKinnon about the changing face of the district. Downtown bars used to mean students, and a coalition of university students is demanding wage parity for university employees, and the statistical measure to enforce that wage parity will be explained at 8:45 by the executive director from Students Nova Scotia. At 9, the Canine Connection, our weekly segment on dog behavior and training with Tristan Flynn from Jolly Tales in Halifax. He'll be with us for half an hour with lessons this week on giving commands to dogs and your calls. Then, Awesome Halifax! There's an actual organization called Awesome Halifax that makes awesome things happen in Halifax. We'll make sense of that at 9:30. As hockey season approaches, along with high school football, concerns will return about kids and concussions. We'll talk to the boss at Halifax's Mindful Scientific about something called the Halifax Consciousness Scanner that could help diagnose those head injuries in a hurry. Lots of universities throughout the Maritimes, but will some of them be emptier than they should be because of a labor disruption? It's about visas and whether foreign students will be able to get them by the start of classes because of a strike by diplomatic staff. 10:15 takes us to Tech Talk with Matt Corkum. Matt's back this week with news about BlackBerry layoffs and why Microsoft stock shot up on word the boss is retiring. Open lines at 10:30, your weekly opportunity to call me about anything. Something you want to correct, something you want to ask, an opinion you want to share. Bring it on. Half an hour of open phones from 10:30 to 11. Of course, 11 is time for our local arts news, and this week, Jeremy Webb from the website Off the Leash will talk to us about the Halifax Fringe Festival and the latest announcements from the Atlantic Film Festival, including the opening and closing gala films. Something new in the mental health field, and I thought I'd heard almost everything at least once, but I had never heard of the positive psychology movement. A counselor from Dalhousie University will tell us what it is, how it's supposed to work, who might benefit from it. At 11:30, have you heard of what happened this week in Toronto at the annual end of summer fair, the Canadian National Exhibition? The CNE is famous for big food, and this year's star attraction is getting unwanted attention after dozens of people got sick. More on that in a second, and I'll ask a food safety expert which midway and fast food munchies are most likely to have you running to the bathroom afterward. Then wrap up the show by asking, what is the craziest thing you've ever eaten? And was it any good? It's fun to listen, but it's even more fun when you call. Find us by phone today throughout the show at 405-6000 in the Halifax area. 405-6000 or toll free from anywhere, 1-877-801-8255. That's 1-877-801-8255. Twitter's good, too. Our handle is at MMWeekend. You can follow me at Simpson957, and my email address is scott.simpson@rci.rogers.com. You can listen to us live streaming on the web, download podcast versions after the show, or do it the old-fashioned way in real time on your radio, news957.com. News957, News88.9, News91.9. Happy to have you on board. Also happy to speak this week for our Crime Stopper segment with RCMP Sergeant Alain Leblanc. Hello, sir.
Good morning. How are you?
I'm doing quite well today. How about you?
Very well, thank you.
What's on your mind this week?
Well, actually, you may have seen our release yesterday with regards to drivers basically snapping pictures at a crash scene.
Yes,
and of course, this resulted in some fines being issued.
This is an interesting development. This is interesting, Sergeant, because I had a Halifax traffic officer on one of our shows a little over a week ago asking about rubberneckers and what kinds of things they could be charged with. And I asked him, could somebody be charged with taking pictures at a crash scene? And he said, it's possible. It sounds like this is something that happened.
What it did in this particular instance, we were investigating a collision on Highway 102 in Sackville. And our officers observed drivers basically taking out their cell phones and taking a video or pictures of the collision scene. This is absolutely unacceptable. And these people were issued tickets. because, again, it's very concerning to us. It's about safety. And another crash could have easily occurred as these people were on their cell phones. And, of course, when that happens, they are not paying attention to what's occurring around them. And basically, it's a dangerous behavior.
What? So they? It's not as though they got in a crash, though.
Well, but the reality is that they are not paying attention to, you know, what's around them, and they're not paying attention to what's ahead of them. We know that from statistics gathered in the last 5 years, that distracted driving is the leading cause of serious injury and fatal collisions on our highways. We know that for a fact. When people are in their vehicles, people should be paying attention at all times. And the reality here is when you are approaching a crash scene, people should be really slowing down and paying extra attention to what's around them, because the reality is when you're approaching a crash scene, quite often people ahead of you may slam on the brakes. They're rubbernecking. They're looking at the collision. Now, that's human nature. We're curious in nature. But the reality is that people have to pay attention to what's ahead of them, and they cannot be stopping. Or, yes, we expect people to slow down, but do not stop. Do not take pictures of crime scene, or collision scenes. It's very, very dangerous.
So what is the charge they'll be facing?
Well, it's distracted driving. It's $169.91. And again, you know, we know that distracted driving is the leading cause of serious injury and fatal collisions on our highways, you know.
Are they also being charged with using a cell phone while driving?
That is correct.
Okay.
You cannot use a cell phone while operating a motor vehicle. You see, the reality is this, Scott. As a police officer, I've attended several crashes over the years, and we know that there are four causal factors that you will find in any serious injury or fatal collision. And basically, they are speed or aggressive driving.
Mm-hmm.
And for that alone, last year, the RCMP, we issued 42 stunting charges.
Wow.
Now, that's quite something.
Yeah, that used to be an extremely rare charge. Now you're charging people with it a lot.
Exactly. And so far this year, we are at 25 charges being laid so far this year. So that's the first factor. The second factor, obviously, is impaired driving by alcohol or a drug. And I think you saw the statistics that were released for July. I believe it was 80 drivers that were charged in HRM for impaired driving. So that's a high number. The third one would be unbelted occupants, you know, people who do not wear seat belts. That's a leading cause of, again, injury collisions or fatal collisions. And the last one, of course, being distracted driving, which is a real concern to us.
Wow. Yeah, seatbelt. I can't imagine why somebody wouldn't wear a seatbelt these days.
Well, exactly. It's kind of funny, you know. We tell our family members be safe at all times, but then you're going to have parents who will get into a vehicle and not expect their kids to be, or their children or other passengers in the vehicle to be belted in. You know, the reality is that, you know, to keep our highways safe, you know, it's everyone's responsibility. Every driver must take responsibility for making sure that, you know, our highways are kept safe, and not, you know, belting occupants in a vehicle is beyond me.
Anything that the police are asking the public's assistance for this week that you want to let us know about?
Well, actually, it's been a fairly quiet week, if I can say this, in HRM. You know, it's been very quiet, and we're happy about that. You know, the other thing that, as far as our focus in the next week or so, we will be talking about back to school, you know, safety for kids.
Oh, yes.
And yes, that's upon us. And, of course, we will be reminding motorists, you know, of a few basic tips, basically, to help drivers, you know, keep children safe. So within a week or so, you should see another release. And basically, you know, it's going to focus on, you know, motorists really slowing down, school zones, of course, scanning the roads, you know, for children and you know, there'll be a lot of kids on the streets in the morning, you know, reminding motorists to slow down or stop, and, of course, avoid common distractions like loud music and so on. And, of course, you know, we would expect drivers to change their driving habits, especially approaching crosswalks. With school, you know, back pretty soon, we're going to see an increase in, you know, kids on the road, cyclists, and of course more vehicle traffic. So we will be reminding people to, you know, drive carefully, especially going through crosswalks or school zones.
And it's important to remember the rules about school buses.
Right, exactly. That's a good point, Scott. You know, we will have a lot of school buses on our streets. And when these red lights are flashing, you know, you have to be extremely careful. You must come to a complete stop.
Do we have to wait until the lights are flashing to obey those rules?
Of course, as soon as the lights come on, you know, the motorists are expected to stop. I mean, we know that if the lights are on, there's typically a child that will be crossing the highway or maybe dropped off. But the reality is that we must stop when these lights are flashing.
Sounds good. Sergeant, thank you very much for bringing all this to our attention. It's stuff that's well worth noting.
Thank you so much.
Have a safe week. That is Sergeant Alain LeBlanc with the RCMP. Remember that Crime Stoppers is interested in your information and not your name. When you call Crime Stoppers, you are speaking with civilians, not the police. So if you're one of those folks who has some kind of hate on for the police, then don't be afraid. Come on. Fork over the information and you could be in line for a cash reward. Call, I think it's 1-800-222-TIPS. And it's it can be completely anonymous. You can leave your name, you know, if you're one of the helpful types, or if you have reason to fear, you can be anonymous and you can still collect your cash reward even if you do leave an anonymous tip. They have neat ways of doing that. A story that Crime Stoppers is looking for tips for right now. Well, I shouldn't use the word story because it's a chapter out of somebody's real life. A police chase last night of sorts. Just a little before midnight, a West Division patrol officer in the Halifax area was sent to a call, and the vehicle in front of him failed to pull over for his lights and sirens. Yeah, so he was responding with lights and sirens to a call, and the person ahead didn't pull over. Well, the vehicle eventually did stop on Dutch Village Road in Halifax, but took off again as the officer was at the window speaking with the driver. So they pulled over the driver a second time at Alex Street and Rosedale Avenue in Halifax. The woman inside then tried to take off on foot. Police chased her down, arrested her, supposedly without incident, although the whole thing sounds like an incident. She was the only one in the vehicle. She wasn't hurt. Police weren't hurt. They never got up to really high speeds. She's facing numerous criminal charges as a result of the incident, and due to the fact that she was on court order not to operate a vehicle. Charges include 6 counts of breaching recognizance, flight from police. You don't usually see that charge. Taking a motor vehicle without... I don't even know what that charge is. Taking a motor vehicle without theft and possession under $5,000 and dangerous operation of a motor vehicle. Also, a lot of tickets under the Motor Vehicle Act. And you know what they found inside her car, allegedly? Bag of illegal cigarettes. Yeah, you know those TV ads where they say, hey, you want some illegal cigarettes? We got a bag. And don't forget your shattered picture of a family. It comes with the illegal cigarettes. Cigarettes, illegal cigarettes hurt people. Maybe this is the kind of person who's trafficking in illegal cigarettes, the kind of person who runs from the law. Being half facetious here. Ladies being held in custody for a bail hearing. And I think police are looking for tips on that from Crime Stoppers. Also, one other thing that they're looking for tips on. Two this morning, East Division members responded to the outbound lane on 100 Main Street. There was a guy who may have been struck by a vehicle. A very, very drunk guy. 25-year-old guy lying on the road. He had recently left what police are describing as a nearby liquor establishment. He's walking along Main Street. He'll survive. He's awfully sore and probably not feeling well at all this morning. Taken to the QE2 for treatment. Excessive alcohol is believed to have played a role in the incident, but police are trying to figure out if maybe he was struck by a passing vehicle. Perhaps that is the reason for him being on the road. Perhaps the alcohol is the reason for him being on the road, but they think being hit by a vehicle had something to do with his injuries. Nobody saw anything. Actually, that may not be true. Police just haven't spoken to anyone who saw anything. If you did see anything, they want you to call Crime Stoppers. Or better yet, call the police at 490-5016. That's the non-emergency line, 490-5016 in Halifax. But anonymous tips can be sent to Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS, or you can send a secure web tip at crimestoppers.ns.ca, or text a tip. And I don't understand how that works, even though the instructions are right in front of me here. I'm not going to pass them on without me understanding. Hey, Bacon Bits is next on Maritime Morning. Saturday morning, it's 24th of August. I'm Scott Simpson. You're tuned to Maritime Morning. Let's have a name that newsmaker round, which is just for honor today as we wind down the summer. Maybe we'll go hunting for some prizes as we get into... I don't think I'm allowed to talk about that process where they count how many listeners we have. I don't think I'm allowed to explicitly refer to anything like that, but, you know... You will notice that radio stations do a lot of prize giveaways starting in September. So maybe I'll see if I can gather up some prizes for that. But this week's Name That Newsmaker is just for honor. Ask yourself, do I know this voice?
There are other ways. We need to create an environment where businesses can make money, and they can't in this current environment because the costs are simply too high.
If you are a frequent talk radio listener on this radio station... You may know who that is. I will tell you who that is. I'll try to remember to tell you who that is at the bottom of the hour. Right now, let's have some breakfast.
Bacon!
Bacon!
Say, I smell bacon. Does anyone else smell bacon?
Yeah, I definitely smell a pork product of some type.
Bagel? Ooh la la.
This subject will come up again at the end of the show at 11:30. Okay, last week we told you about the Cronut Burger. It is a deep-fried donut croissant hybrid stuffed with meat and cheese topped with maple bacon jam. It was going to debut at the Canadian National Exhibition in Toronto, and it sure did. Problem was, more than 150 people got really sick at the Canadian National Exhibition. Toronto Public Health investigated and say early laboratory tests revealed that, yeah, the Cronut Burger was contaminated with the Staphylococcus aureus toxin, a recognized source of foodborne illness. Not clear how the toxin ended up in the burgers, nor have health officials pinpointed a specific ingredient as the source. According to Dr. David McEwen, Toronto's Medical Officer of Health, based on information from the ill individuals, the only common food exposure they had was a Cronut Burger served by Epic Burgers. Toronto Public Health began investigating Epic Burgers and Waffles, which has a booth at the CNE after a dozen people initially reported symptoms of gastrointestinal illness earlier this week. That number has since climbed to 150. The vendor voluntarily closed and will stay that way indefinitely. The staph bacteria produces a toxin that can cause nausea, vomiting, and diarrhea, within 2 to 4 hours of ingestion, Dr. McEwen said, noting the vast majority of people recover from the illness, but in rare cases, it can be serious, even fatal, for young children and the elderly. But people typically recover without long-term side effects. Toronto Public Health was still investigating the cause of the contamination and could not confirm whether the illness outbreak was due to poor food handling, bad meat, or something else entirely. Inadequate temperature control and inadequate food handling could cause the bacteria to multiply, according to Dr. McEwen, and that article is from the National Post. We will be discussing this further later in the show. At 11:30, I will have a food safety expert from the Nova Scotia Community College Culinary School on, and I will ask him what kind of food products that you can get at fall fairs and county fairs and community fairs and other places where you can get fast food or odd food. What kinds of things are most likely to make you sick? What kinds of things are likely to be handled poorly or have ingredients that could be problematic and make you a little sick later? So we'll ask which foods you might want to avoid, which ones might be safest, and then I will turn it over to you and ask, what's the weirdest thing you've eaten? I mean, this Cronut Burger is a monster. The people who were creating it said it had 7,000 calories. I don't think so. That sounds a little high, and I can't imagine that they actually measured such a thing. But you know, what's the craziest thing you've eaten, and was it any good? So what's crazy food you've had? And did you even like it? So I'll ask you that at around 11:45. Keep that in mind. Think of that throughout the show, but not so much that it makes you sick. Think about that, and we'll ask you about that later. Coming up in a few minutes, we'll have a news update with Amanda Devison, talk about a new sports bar in downtown Halifax, and a discussion about some wage parity demands on behalf of university students about university employees. Huh. All that in the next half hour of Maritime Morning. Here with Maritime Morning, and it's 8:32 on Saturday, the 24th of August. I think it's the second last weekend of August for 2013, and then we're into September. It's back to school time. It is back to peak time for radio, with expecting an election call soon in Nova Scotia. The news cycles pick up a little bit more. We get busier around the newsroom. We try even harder to make you love us. So don't forget, you're listening to News 95.7 in Halifax, News 88.9 St. John, News 91.9 in Moncton. And hey, if you're near a computer, could you go to twitter.com/MMWeekend? Find us at Maritime Morning. We'd love to have you on as a Twitter follower. We're running a friendly kind of contest between all the talk shows. See who can get the most Twitter followers this month. And I got to tell you. You know I love you. And I know you love us. But we're in last place. Among Twitter followers, every other talk show on the network has more Twitter followers than we do. So give us a hug. On the internet. Twitter.com/MMWeekend. I'm not too proud to beg. Granted, every other talk show on this network is on every day of the week. We're only on 2 days a week, but we hope to make up for it. Trying to punch above our weight. 8:33 a.m. Just before the news break, we had a visit with our weekly contest called Name That Newsmaker. This week, no prize except the honor of knowing that you're a smart person. We played this clip.
There are other ways. We need to create an environment where businesses can make money, and they can't in this current environment because the costs are simply too high.
If you are a regular listener on this radio station of any of our talk shows, you've probably heard that voice before because he's a frequent commentator. That man's name is Kevin Lacey. He is from the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. He's the local spokesperson, I suppose, is one of his titles with the Canadian Taxpayers Federation. Often speaking up about issues regarding how the government is spending the public money. And in this particular case, let me find the exact context for that quote. That was a 7-second clip specifically referring to ice cream money. The Canadian Taxpayers Federation this week was questioning why the Nova Scotia government is offering $7.5 million to help build a dairy plant in Truro. Well, to help the dairy plant anyway expand and build new ice cream machines, Kevin Lacey says, with an election call expected soon, the money for the Scott's Burn facility is, in his words, pork barrel style politics. But Premier Dexter says the company needs that money to grow, and the government's job is to help that. $2 million is going to Scott's Burn to help it buy new machines to make premium novelty ice cream products. Another $5.5 million will be loaned, which is intended to create 40 jobs. Up to $480,000 of the loan is forgivable based on job creation. That loan is repayable over 15 years. Jeff McClellan, Liberal economic development critic, says the loan's good news, but he believes the government is trying to curry favor with the voters in the run-up to an election. It's 8:35 on Saturday morning. This is Maritime Morning Weekend Edition. We're trying to track down downtown Paul. Paul McKinnon is with the Downtown Halifax Business Commission, and he is due to join us right now to talk about some of the changing face of downtown Halifax. We're unable to find him right now, though. So, Paul, if you're listening, give us a call, 405-6000, or find us on Twitter. Actually, I'm going to tweet him right now. Downtown Paul. Hey, man, we're trying to reach you for that interview right now. Cheers. All right, so if Downtown Paul's listening, he will get that, and we'll talk to him. Here's the issue. The Palace was a longstanding nightclub in downtown Halifax on Brunswick Street, right near the Metro Center, like just half a block away or less from the Halifax Metro Center. the business has changed downtown. Students used to be so numerous and so thirsty that there were many, many bars downtown that could serve them. But they've changed their habits a little bit. I don't know. I'm not going to say that they're switching from alcohol to things they smoke or something along those lines. That's not my area of expertise. But they are tending to drink at home a little bit more. We've heard about this. Pre-gaming, they call it. That they will. It's cheaper for them to drink at their own apartment or at somebody's house than it is to go to a bar. And so sometimes they're not patronizing some of the bars. So the bars are having to change. The Palace nightclub was getting inconsistent business. So it closed. It closed earlier this year, and the people who run it are changing their plans. And this fall, it's going to reopen as something called HFX Sports Bar and Grill. 11,000 square feet. And from what I hear, it's going to be pretty spectacular. Fireplaces, dining tables, booths, circular-shaped booths, and a whole bunch of TVs. I'm reading an article in the Truro Daily News that says, the quotes, one of the co-owners, Marcel Khoury. They're the co-owners, Marcel and Michelle Khoury. They own the sports bar, the ale house, Halifax Ale House, which is, I think, right next door. They say the investments they're making are going to be arguably the most ever spent in a bar in Nova Scotia. I'm hearing, what, $2 million to do the renovations? So this will feature a two-story wall of TV screens with one huge 250-inch middle screen. Imagine that. One TV, 250 inches, playing the event of the day with 90 more televisions, including some in the private booths and a living room area with fireplaces and couches. Khoury says there shouldn't be any spot that you could sit at in the bar where you can't see a TV, and that includes the stairwells and the bathrooms. And they'll show all kinds of sports, from hockey to cricket to rugby, in hopes of bringing fans who watched at home. Khoury says the renos will cost about $2 million, which includes a dining area where he hopes families can eat before a Mooseheads game, and new electrical and plumbing, and a complete facelift to the outside, which was, frankly, kind of bland. That's not in the Truro. That's Daily News. That's my comment. It was kind of dull-looking on the outside. It's going to be bright and colorful now on the outside. After looking at trends in the industry, the brothers, according to the Truro Daily News, decided to leave the dance club behind and go with a sports lounge idea in a glitzy, upscale atmosphere with food at a price similar, they say, to Boston Pizza. Despite some business closures over the last years, Khoury said the future's bright for downtown Halifax, with factors like the new convention center and Cogswell Interchange project on the horizon. Khoury says they wanted to establish themselves before all the huge developments are completed, and they wouldn't be making the investment unless they thought they'd be in for it for the long haul. I was curious what downtown Paul would say. Paul McKinnon is with the Downtown Halifax Business Commission. And he has said in the past that downtown Halifax is not on its way out. It is not declining anymore. In fact, some of the business closures that we had seen, including the closure of the Pogue Fideau and the Palace, were not a sign of failing in downtown, but a sign of renewal. He pointed out that there were several new restaurants that had opened, new establishments that were bringing a new kind of clientele, serving a new kind of customer, and that if you look at the developments such as the convention center and the attached Nova Center hotel and condos, that was going to, in fact, bring more people downtown. So that's what the city could use, a vibrant downtown. And so the opening of this HFX Sports Bar and Grill should be sometime in October. It's going to be a very expensive one, too. And you can expect that they will cash in on some of the crowds at the Mooseheads games and the Rainmen. With 11,000 square feet of space there'll be plenty of room for people who will be attending some of the hockey games. And with the Mooseheads still riding the tails of last year's monster season, you can expect some big crowds this year as well. So looking forward to how all that plays out. They want to turn their business into more of a seven-night-a-week business, kind of like the Halifax Ale House, where I've enjoyed some delicious chicken wings over the years. Well, that's it for that topic. Let's look ahead to our next subject, shall we? Students. We were just talking about students and what they're going to be doing in downtown Halifax. Some of them are working during school. Would more work at the university if the university had more equitable pay? That's something we will ask Jonathan Williams about next. He is the executive director of Students NS, and he will be our next guest on Maritime Morning. ...8:45 on Saturday morning. Thanks for getting up early for Maritime Morning Weekend Edition. I'm Scott Simpson. You're listening live on News 95.7 in Halifax, News 88.9 in St. John, News 91.9 in Moncton. Yeah. So let's check it out. The situation involving students and how much money they make if they work at one of the universities. And to explore the issue much further, let's talk to Jonathan Williams, Executive Director of Students NS. How you doing, Jonathan Williams? Long time no speak to.
Yeah, how are you, man?
I'm doing pretty well. I understand the idea of looking for wage parity and stable wages. I've never heard of what you're proposing, though. Explain what wage mark is and what it has to do with wages at universities.
All right. So wage mark is a new organization that started up in Toronto this year. And it gives a certification to different organizations. It could be private companies or public institutions like universities, based on the difference in pay between the top income earner in the organization and the bottom 10% of their workforce. And they've got a research behind this and a sort of a historical view, where they've developed this understanding that sort of an 8-to-1 ratio is a historical norm, and there's a good performance of organizations that get to that number, and once you get above that number, the inequity within the organization tends to be negative. What we've found is that for universities, the salaries of the top administrators have been increasing at a really high rate, and they've reached levels that are just beyond what students are willing to accept, and frankly, I think what the public is willing to accept. We're talking about salaries above $400,000 for people that are working for a public organization. So we've requested that the universities apply to get this wage mark certification, and basically certify that they're not paying their top administrators amounts that none of us would really support.
Then, okay, which end of the pay scale are you hoping will change then? The administrators? Or, like, are you hoping that the administrators will be paid less, or that students working at the lowest level jobs will be paid more?
We'd like to see both. I mean, obviously the pay of one staff person at the top is a more easy thing to change. It costs less to change, ironically, than the pay of, 10% of your workforce at the bottom. So I think in the short term, this is a conversation about the salaries of your university presidents. But in the long term, if it creates a situation where if the top administrators want to increase their salaries, then they need to start compensating the bottom of their workforce better. And we do think that there are a lot of students that are working in the lower end of university payrolls in Nova Scotia that are working part-time to help finance their studies.
Now, I have not asked the administrators myself why the pay is so much at their level. I'm going to guess, though, that it's their argument is that they need to pay decent money to attract the best people, whereas the people at the lower end, you're not trying to attract the best people, you're just trying to attract somebody for the job. Does that kind of logic hold up at all in these arguments over pay equity?
I think that is the argument from the universities. I think you nailed it there. I don't think it holds up with public institutions. It's not really my business to get into private companies. It's certainly, I don't have a mandate for that. But within public institutions, I think we have a consensus that there is a certain amount that goes beyond what we're willing to pay as taxpayers and as students, especially. And when you start getting into the $300,000 a year, $400,000 a year, you're really pushing it. I think you've surpassed that limit, and especially, you know, the two administrators last year who made over $400,000. It's not as if their institutions are doing very well. One of them is the former president of NASCAD, and he left NASCAD when NASCAD was in really in the serious throes of the current financial crisis that university still isn't really necessarily out of. And I don't know the particulars of their current situation, but we all know that they have. It's been a question of whether or not they can remain as a viable independent institution. And then Dalhousie, which was making serious cuts last year, gave its university president an 11% raise. So even if you were going to accept that argument about competition, which we wouldn't, you would think that there would be a correlation between the amount being given to these presidents and their performance, and that doesn't seem to exist either.
Hmm. This wage mark certification, I know certain certifications are worn as a badge of honor by organizations, certain environmental certifications, certain ISO 9000 for organizational structure and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Are there institutions, universities and such that brag about their wage mark certification?
I think they would. I think it would demonstrate a commitment to good hiring policies that would win people over, that would win them attention. It would provide an assurance that they aren't providing compensation to their executives that's out of whack with what Nova Scotians and students would expect. I think that there would definitely be a legitimacy to having this certification, and it's a requirement with WageMark, I believe, that they have to post the certification on their annual reports and on their audits. So they would be required to kind of advertise that they'd done this. But absolutely, I think it would be a win for them. I mean, I think a lot of Nova Scotians right now have seen these numbers and have felt very indignant with how universities are compensating their top administrators, and they're not happy about it. So this would be a step in the right direction for the university.
You know, I enjoy talking with you, Jonathan, because unlike some, I'm not going to point fingers at other student group leaders or participants, but I keep hearing that the government needs to do more to reduce student debt, and that students need more money and they need to control the cost of tuition. But every time I see one of these complaints, the aim has not been lowering the salaries of the administration, and it's interesting that you are looking at that. Is this something you would like to see the government step in on and perhaps make happen?
I think there is a role for government. I mean, I think we've provided universities with an opportunity to do this themselves. If they're not willing to do it themselves, then I think government needs to require it. Needs to establish some kind of standard, and government would have various avenues to be able to do that. But I think in general, the stance that Students Nova Scotia has taken, we released a major report back in May or June, I can't remember precisely, about the university system, about cost to the system and what's a fair way to fund the system. And one of our key findings is that the ultimate challenge in keeping university affordable for Nova Scotia students, but also for the Nova Scotia tax base, the people of Nova Scotia, is to control university costs. Is that universities can't have growth in their costs and inflation rate beyond the growth in the economy, or even much beyond the inflation rate of the general economy. And so they have in the past felt that they had that kind of an inflation rate, and that's not sustainable for Nova Scotia. It's not sustainable for students, certainly. And so they need to change how they're operating. And the salaries of these top administrators is a part of that. In a way, I think the culture of an organization is set from the top down, so changing this could help to change the culture of the whole institutions and move towards a more financially sustainable model.
You make a very eloquent case for this. Could I assume that you have gone to the universities and said, we'd like you to do this?
Yes, we have. We're in an ongoing conversation with the universities about addressing the financial challenges that they face, and not looking to students to basically carry the load for the inability to control costs. And it's an ongoing conversation.
And how about the wage mark part of it?
We haven't had a direct discussion yet. I've had a couple of emails back and forth since we made that request, basically, since we made our statement on Thursday. But that will definitely be an ongoing conversation. Our student unions also have membership on boards of governors of the university, so they're going to have an ability to push this as university policy.
Hey, it's almost back to school time.
Yep.
Are you done school?
I'm done. I'm on staff.
Right on. Any message for the new arrivals?
Hey, be safe, I think, is the biggest thing. Yeah.
Well, that's good to know. Look both ways.
Yeah.
Look both ways before you cross the street, especially down near Dalhousie.
Yeah.
And don't drink too much.
Yeah. Well, you know, be responsible, be safe, but have a good time.
And take care of each other, really.
Yeah.
Because there's,
absolutely.
You know,
we're going to be doing a lot of work on sexual assault prevention this year, and on reducing kind of risks around alcohol.
Yeah.
So we're hoping that it'll be a safe start to the school year.
Absolutely. Jonathan, always good to talk with you. Thanks very much for being on the show.
Hey, thank you.
I hope you have a safe fall.
Hey, thanks.
Take care. That's Jonathan Williams, Students NS Executive Director, talking about his desire to see the wage mark standard and certification implemented at Nova Scotia University, something that is based on the ratio between the money paid to the highest paid employees and the bottom 10% of the earners, and the maximum ratio accepted for that certification is 8-1. And currently the only institutions that would almost certainly meet the standard, according to Students Nova Scotia, are the Atlantic School of Theology and Université Sainte Anne. Lots more Maritime Morning still to come. We have 3 more hours of live talk radio to bring you on this gorgeous Saturday, starting with the Canine Connection, your weekly look at dog behavior, dog training. If you have dog questions, give us a call at 405-6000 in Halifax or 1-877-801-8255. In a few minutes, we'll be joined by Tristan Flynn, certified professional dog trainer from Jolly Tails in Halifax. I think he is in Truro today for an aggression workshop. So he'll be speaking with us by phone, but we have fancy phones that will connect us with him and him with you and you with us. That 3-way conversation with your dog questions is one of the many things ahead this morning on Maritime Morning.